Welcome back to a brand new episode of the Pick a Side Podcast. We had a lot of things happen tonight. The Lakers go down 0-3. The Sixers get game three. So do the Magic. And the NFL draft happened. I don't know where you guys want to start off first. Outside of the Cavs and Magic, it doesn't matter where.
Hey, shout out to the Magic, though, because we're not going to talk about them. But everyone counted them out. River's up here clowning me for taking them. And they go and put belt to ass at home against Cleveland and smoke them. I didn't watch really any of this game. I saw Paolo, box score watching, did his thing. 13 to 26. He played Jaylen phenomenal Colts. Looking at the back box score. But shout out to the Magic, man.
Shout out to the Magic is right, because after the first two games, we were wondering if this was going to be a series at all, and they absolutely put belt to ass. So shout out to the young guys. Shout out to Orlando for taking the first game that they played in Orlando. You're right. Didn't get a chance to watch much of it. Didn't get a chance to watch the Knicks and Sixers game that much either. I was really locked in on the draft, especially because my Broncos were picking so early. But tough night. Lakers are probably going to get swept. 11 straight. Tragic. All I could do is laugh, honestly. Not much positive other than I want to give credit to Anthony Davis. I was very critical of Anthony Davis on his last game's performance, because down the stretch he was a no-show. Today it was understandable why in the fourth quarter he wasn't able to get anything going, because he was the only one that really showed up for us on a consistent basis tonight. And they were essentially throwing the entire team at him to try and stop him. And even still, he was trying to fight through it and still put baskets up. I give him endless respect. Anthony Davis died on his sword tonight. Respect to him. Other than that, Lakers were garbage. Lakers were not good. And we deserve to lose, sadly. Another double-digit blown lead. That's just what's going to happen when you play the Nuggets.
I feel like the game was over once they went into halftime and they were only down four. I feel like after that, it was inevitable. You knew that Denver was going to come away with the win. I didn't get a chance to watch much of this game. This series stopped interesting me after last game. Last game was epic. It was such a roller coaster.
You were disinterested after the best game of the playoffs?
Because after game two, I knew the Lakers were going to get swept.
That both those games were in Denver.
Yeah, there was no way the Lakers were going to bounce back from such a demoralizing loss. I don't know if you guys seen the video of Darvin Ham drawing up a play in the timeout.
And there's no play.
And he looks clueless for like 30 seconds, not knowing what to come up with. I just think the Lakers are done. Like, listen, Denver's a better team. I understand there was some optimism around the Lakers. Maybe, you know, playing Denver at full health, they have a chance. But I think everybody walking into this series knew that Denver was going to take care of business. It didn't matter.
Everyone didn't know Denver was going to take care of business, but I think a lot of people thought it could go 5, 6, maybe 7 games if things would go right. The fact that all of these games really, we could go 11 straight. It feels like all 11. I'm sure it wasn't all of them, but it feels like all 11 are the same way. The Lakers go up early. They have a bunch of energy. Then towards the end of the second quarter, Denver's able to cut the lead going into halftime. Third quarter, by the end of the third quarter, it's either a game Denver has a lead or it's like, you know, a 2-point game. And we know in the fourth quarter, Denver's going to be one of the best teams in the NBA. I was just telling Drew before we started the stream that it's unfortunate for the Lakers, because it really feels like outside of Denver, they would have been able to beat or at least compete with every other team in the West. I think going up against the Timberwolves, going up against the Clippers, OKC, especially looking at those top four, that they'd be able to go in that series and I would be picking the Lakers to win, or at minimum thinking it's a 6 or 7 game series in that other team's direction. But when it came to Denver, I had all the confidence in the world that they were going to win. I was expecting a better effort than this from the Lakers. I mean, that game two is brutal, and I do understand where Joel's coming from, where it's like you almost lost interest in the series because it felt like the Lakers needed that game two. They needed to have that kind of confidence boost where it's 1-1, the streak is over, we're going back to LA. But then you lose a game like that where you're down 20, and it feels like, damn, if we don't win this game, are we ever going to get a game? And it was the same thing today, where we had some energy in early in that first and second quarter. And then it felt like over time, especially in that third quarter, Denver just kind of flipped a switch. And for a team that was down 0-2 on their home court, it just never felt like the Lakers had that sense of urgency or, you know, hop in their step that they should when it's the second half. You're losing to Denver and your playoffs are basically on the line because you're going to go down 0-3. It's going to be a very interesting offseason for the Lakers. I know it's 3-0. It's not official yet. I think I've heard rumors that they're going to bring back Darvin Ham no matter what. I think it's a mistake. I think you have to try something new. You can make moves when it comes to D'Angelo Russell or, you know, kind of outside pieces on this team, outside LeBron and AD. But I'll be looking at head coach if I was the Lakers going into the offseason.
And it was funny because first couple of games we hadn't seen Jamal Murray really cook up the way that we were anticipating. Game two, of course, in the fourth quarter, he figured it out, hit a bunch of jump shots late, of course, hit the buzzer beater to ultimately win them the game. Today, he was completely locked in. Aaron Gordon, the MVP of the night, obviously every night the MVP is going to be Nikola Jokic, but Aaron Gordon had himself a hell of a ball game and just sitting in that dunker spot, getting offensive rebounds, putting back shot attempts, just being fed the ball from Jamal Murray or a Jokic or an MPJ for a fact where let's also give him his respect. He was awesome tonight. It seemed like every time he put up a shot, I was closing my eyes, understanding that this ball's going in. The mid-range was he was killing us, especially late. It's tough to sit with. I definitely am not happy, obviously, as a fan of the Lakers, a fan of LeBron James, to see us go down 0-3. But again, Nuggets are the better team, 11 straight. Not much I can say. You know, just hope for the best, and hopefully we can take one at least. But understanding realistically, it's probably not happening.
The Knicks lost to the Sixers, 114 to 125. The Philadelphia 76ers, when Joel Embiid, he dropped 50. And I don't know how to pronounce what he's dealing with currently.
Bell's palsy.
He's dealing with Bell's palsy. He still dropped 50. It's a credit to him. I felt like the Knicks played well. We shot well. Jalen Brunson had his first great game. But you can't withstand a 50 ball. I mean, Joel Embiid was just on one. And it was bittersweet for me because I was looking at prospects today, and I saw Joel Embiid 2.5 three-pointers made, and it had a demon next to it. I'm thinking about how Joel Embiid has been playing recently since his injury. You know, a lot of perimeter shots. I said, you know what? I'm going to take that. He ended up doubling it.
He banged that.
5. Anthony Davis, I forgot to shout out him. 29.5 points, demon. He had 33. So, cousin, I want me a little son on prospects, and I just got to shout that out.
Love that.
I want to give respect to Joel Embiid. But at the same time, he was dirty today. I think he might have injured Mitchell Robinson. I understand the referees missed the fouls late in game two. Tyrese Maxey, it should have been called a foul. He was fouled. I understand that. For the referees to allow as many blatant acts that Joel Embiid had in game three, flailing into Mitchell Robinson's legs. At one point in the game, he fell down and grabbed Mitchell Robinson by the ankle, looking like he was going to break his ankle and dropped him to the floor. He was kicking dudes in the groin left and right. I could give him credit for what he did, dropping 50. Yes, he deserved that. He played his ass off. But the fact that he got away with so many blatant acts of trying to injure Knicks players, that is not acceptable. And if that was any other player but Joel Embiid, they would have been ejected in a heartbeat. The fact that the officials let these things go was just unbelievable, and it can't happen again. I understand they wanted to give the Sixers their get back because they messed up a call late in game two, but that's their job to get the call right in the first place. You can't punish the Knicks because you failed to do your job. You still have to officiate the game correctly the very next game. It doesn't matter what happens before.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought I didn't watch the entirety of this game. It was kind of on a side TV while I was watching the draft. But I did see the Embiid dirty play. And I understand that he's Joel Embiid. I understand that he's a superstar. And as a referee, you don't want to take superstars out of the game. But if that's not a flagrant two, I don't know what's a flagrant two. I feel like I've seen worse flagrant twos. Didn't Josh Hart get a flagrant two earlier this season against the Bulls on some very skeptical kind of refereeing there? And in this game, I get it's the playoffs and you allow physicality, but that's not physicality. That looks like a player trying to purposely injure another player. And it sucks that Joel Embiid is dealing with this condition on top of having like a physical injury that he's been dealing with, obviously, for the majority of the season. But now Bell's palsy that he has, I do feel kind of conflicted because on one hand, he's dealing with all of these ailments and just had probably his best playoff game of his career, dropping 50 and really willing his team to victory in a must-win situation. But on the other hand, you are purposely trying to injure a player of the New York Knicks, a player with Mitchell Robinson, who's dealt with a flurry of lower body injuries on his own. And he got injured eventually later in this game. I know that didn't have anything to do with that specific play, but ended up injuring his ankle. I believe he left the arena wearing a walking boot. But it's a really tough look if you're Embiid, but he got away with it. It's going to be a flagrant run. He's not going to get suspended or anything, and they end up winning the game. So I think it was a big series win. Of course, again, I didn't watch the game, so I don't have really a ton of takeaways, but it is interesting that Jalen Brunson has by far his best game of this series, and Josh Hart still goes 4-for-8 from three. And outside DiVincenzo, it still looks like a lot of guys shot the ball well, but unfortunately, the Knicks ended up losing this one.
Mitch Robinson did get hurt on a play with Joel Embiid. The first play where he grabbed him by the ankle, he didn't get hurt on that one, but later in the game, Embiid fell on his leg, and that's what injured Mitchell Robinson. So you try to hurt Mitchell Robinson twice. The second time, I guess the job was accomplished for Embiid, and he ended up hurting him. But yeah, I mean, it's just unacceptable. It's unacceptable.
So Bell's palsy, it's a bit of a facial drooping where it's a little bit uneven on each individual side of the face, and it will get better with time. It's going to take steroids. He probably will be healthy within 6 months. So this isn't anything permanent. This just is a shitty thing that he has to deal with on top of a MCL injury that he is coming back from. So obviously that's at least a little bit of a silver lining. Understandably, he should have been ejected in this game, but ifs and buts, it is what it is. At the same time, he just had a 50 ball and he just saved the Sixer season. Let me not say single-handedly, because Maxey did his thing also. Maybe not the cleanest, most efficient, but still 25 in his own right. But 50 and backs against the wall situation. I mean, endless praise to Joel Embiid, especially doing this after coming back from a torn MCL and understanding we were talking about the MVP of the league when he was at 100%. I think we all understand that. To go down with that injury, to lose such a good chunk of your season, to come back a week and a half before your season, the regular season's over, to play some high level basketball three games into the postseason. Maybe not the cleanest two games that we saw in Madison Square Garden, but obviously here at home for them in Wells Fargo, nothing short of fantastic. You're right, as in them trying to clean up the whistles. We did see 14 more fouls called for the Philadelphia 76ers. But again, if you are a Knicks fan, you take the positives. We finally got a great Jalen Brunson game. He broke out, especially on the road in a hostile environment that is Wells Fargo. Not an easy place to play in, especially on the road. Give him his praise. And if you're a Knicks fan, you love to see Josh Hart continuing to hit at an efficient clip, shooting 50% from three. That's huge. Dante was not the best game, but OG now kind of stepping up in that role. That was great to see. Also, losing Mitch is pretty brutal, because that 1-2 combination of Isaiah and Mitchell Robinson is what makes you guys so elite in that front court. But him leaving the arena in a walking boot, not an ideal situation. I don't think it's still going to be a terrible situation for the Knicks, as Isaiah Hartenstein obviously is still a great defender in his own right. Just lacking that depth at the big position is always going to be brutal, especially when you're already down a Julius Randle. But still, if you're a Knicks fan, you still have confidence. Joel Embiid put up 50. Knicks were still very much in this game, just weren't able to claw at that final stretch by the 76ers. But still some positives from the Knicks. Just overwhelming dominance from Joel Embiid.
This is going to be a competitive series.
For sure.
It's going to go to distance. You know, I think Philadelphia probably wins game four. You probably got to play a hell of a game there. You know, I think Philadelphia's role player stepped up. But yeah, I think this is going to be a competitive series. And you were mentioning this earlier, Dales, with Orlando and Cleveland. Paolo, 31-14-5, no turnovers on a night. I think the Magic's formula to winning games in this series and in the playoffs in general, if they advance further, is they just got to get off to fast starts. Because when they get off to fast starts, they get off to early leads, they're able to really clamp down defensively to where their offensive deficiencies aren't that much of a weakness for them. And early in this game, they got up early and came with more energy than Cleveland. Suggs had 20 plus points. They got production from their bench. Cole Anthony and Markelle Fultz combined for 21 points. Jonathan Nosek off the bench hit two threes. I mean, they got production from everywhere. Franz Wagner was playmaking at a high level. That's how they're going to have to win these games. They're going to have to come out with more energy and get off to an early lead on Cleveland. Mitchell struggled, and I think you have to start demanding more from Darius Garland. Darius Garland has been a no-show through three games in this series.
How long have we been asking this awful. Of him, though, Joel? How, like, I feel like every time we talk about the Cavs.
But he had 5 points. I mean, I think game one, he was solid. He was a floor general. He played his role. Agreed. That's all fine. But game three, having 3 points on a row, that's just unacceptable. Donovan Mitchell needs another scorer next to him. He can't just shoulder the load because Orlando's going to adjust. Garland has to be the one to play better and be more efficient and be more aggressive in this series.
And you look at the three-point shooting for the Magic. I mean, anything would have been better than what they had been putting forth the first two games. But going from a 16% to 35, massive difference. Credit to a Jalen Suggs for going out there and knocking down multiple threes tonight. Paolo Banchero having his best game of the series. It was a great team effort by the Magic, but also a pretty terrible showing from the Cleveland Cavaliers as well. It's going to be interesting to see how this series progresses. I still feel confident in my original prediction of Cavaliers in seven. This dominating performance by the Magic was something that shocked me, especially after these first two games. Thought the Magic would win, but it would be a close game. This was an ass kicking. This one wasn't even close. So it's going to be interesting to see how home court advantage plays a role in this series, as obviously each home team has won the three games so far. But seeing how drastically different the Cavaliers looked in this game, it only piques my concern because Darius Garland has continued to be this inconsistent scorer. And I don't even want to go as far to use the word inconsistent because I feel like we haven't seen him be a prolific scorer in some time, where we've seen him in this league average 20 points per game. But with Mitchell, he's obviously had to adjust his role in the offense, now became more of a playmaker, but he still has the skill set and the talent to be a solid scorer, especially in this situation. Understanding, listen, the Magic's defense is one of the best defenses in the league. It's number two for a reason, but this is a young team, and a lot of the attention is being put onto Donovan Mitchell. This is your opportunity to really put that stamp as, I'm the co-star here. I was one of the main pillars, one of the main reasons why the Cavaliers were even aggressive in the first place to go after a Donovan Mitchell. I have to show that. And he hasn't. And it's been unfortunate, especially for Cavaliers fans. But this is going to be a great series. And this is great if you're an Orlando Magic fan. I feel like you can have some sense of relief that what you showed in the regular season wasn't fraudulent. We came out here on our home court and we showed what we had shown this regular season.
Dells, before we move on to the NFL draft stuff, because I am dying to talk about that. The Celtics lost. The Miami Heat beat you guys 50% from three. They shot. And they beat you so bad that you went and made a TikTok about it.
Nah, that was insane work. What did you say? You don't want to talk about it? You're on to game three?
It was actually my plan. I wanted to do a video after every game, but I was out for game one. It was like 1 o'clock. I didn't go home till like nine. But I wanted to do a video after every Celtics game. It just happened that game two, we ended up losing.
Oh, man. Listen, you probably know that you guys are still a better team. But, oh, man, losing to the Heat, man. Only if Jimmy Butler was here, he might have been first-round exits, buddy.
So, Joel, the whole Eric Spoelstra masterclass shit needs to get thrown away?
No, like, I think Spo did a good job. I think offensively we really got stuck in the mud at times. They did a good job sending different looks, especially when Porzingis comes out of the game versus when he's in the game. You could see kind of schematically how things change. But, I mean, they hit 23 threes. So, like, Eric Spoelstra, all the credit to them. But, you know, their shooters hit their shots, and I thought the Celtics did a pretty poor job defensively in terms of just their effort and closeouts. But I'm more worried about, or if I'm a Heat fan, I'm more worried, can we keep up the shooting rather than, oh, I think Spo's just going to, you know, pull something up every single game.
The other game two, the Pelicans, Thunder beat the brakes off the Pelicans.
That was to be expected.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think this is going to be a sweep. You know, OKC is so good. And I can't wait until their OKC and Dallas matchup next round. It's going to be electric.
They need
Ray locking that one in.
They needed this game two performance, and this is what I was anticipating, an SGA masterclass. I was anticipating them to be more comfortable in their second game where, hey, they got the monkey off their back. They won game one, even though that it was a dogfight and it wasn't the prettiest win. You saw Chet play a near-perfect game. You saw J-Dub play the most J-Dub game that you possibly could ask for, the J-Dub that we've seen all season long, the type of guy that people are putting into top 20 conversations, maybe a little bit preemptive, but that just goes to show you how high a level J-Dub has been playing this season. And of course, MVP candidate SGA giving you just an incredibly efficient game, just playing the way that we understand that he can and showing it at the highest level in the biggest moment of the season. This is what we were anticipating. And I think you saw nerves in that game one, but game two, I think you saw them as comfortable as possible. And it obviously showed in the result.
Game one, quarter one, they scored 17 points. Quarter one of game two, they scored 35 points, them being OKC. I think the nerves definitely in that game one kind of being in that environment hit them. It was 94-94, and they put up 124 in this game. So, yeah, the Pelicans wanted a chance, probably should have snuck away with game one. But now all this momentum OKC has, this is going to be 4 or 5-game series.
The NFL draft was tonight. The first round began. Man, oh, man, a lot of great things happened.
Underwhelming?
I thought it was a great draft. I thought it was a great draft. Good.
I think the top six or seven was like pretty chalk. But after that, once Penix hit, it was like, okay, let's go.
You know, Penix turned this shit up. That's my dog.
When talking about the draft, I feel like we should branch out into winners and losers of the night, of the first round. Winners, it has to be the quarterback position. The value has skyrocketed, and six were taken in the first round. Caleb first overall, Jaden second overall, Drake May third overall. Then we had Michael Penix being the fourth quarterback taken at number 8. The Vikings straight up one spot at number 10 with the Jets to take J.J. McCarthy. And then the Broncos take Bo Nix at pick number 12. All quarterbacks, I think, it kind of shocked me that all six went in the top 12. I was definitely expecting something different. But I will say 4 of the 6 ones, I think, got drafted into good situations. I think Jaden Daniels, it was I'm not high on Jaden Daniels. I know I've been vocal to you guys about that. I'm not high on Jaden Daniels. I'm not high on the Commander situation. And that mistake, in my opinion, it was a mistake. The Patriots reaped the benefits of it because they got Drake May, who's talented. They need to work out that offensive situation out there in New England, but Drake May has the talent to be special.
But you said 4 of the 6 went to a good situation. I'm assuming you say Bo Nix is one of those that did not go to a good situation, understanding that we are a ways away. I don't believe Drake May went to a good situation as of right now. Still does not have the weapons, the adequate skill position players around him to be successful. I understand he's the first chess piece in their future plans. But where we stand right now, I still would say he's not in a great position, because if we want to say Drake May got put into a good position, then hell, I can argue Bo Nix got put into a good position, because we do have Sean Payton. And Sean Payton, who hasn't taken a quarterback in the first round, I don't think ever in his career, made it a point of emphasis. This is our guy. I came into the night with Bo Nix being my master plan. There was no other player on my mind. And we were still able to stay at pick 12, which obviously I don't think that surprised anyone, and still get our guy. And we have one of the most trustworthy play callers in the game.
I don't think Drake May went to a good situation. Okay. I think he's 2 of the 6 quarterbacks that went to a bad one. I think Jaden went to a bad one. I think Drake May went to a bad one.
Oh, so Bo went to a good situation.
When you're with Sean Payton, you have Courtland Sutton, you have good offensive line. It's a good situation. I think Bo Nix is a perfect fit for Sean Payton. And I think with Sean Payton, he has a chance to become a star. I think he could become a star quarterback with Sean Payton. I think Bo Nix has a lot of tools and traits. He's accurate. He set the college football record for accuracy in a season at 77%. He doesn't turn over the ball. He reads the field. An interesting tidbit on him and the Broncos drafting him: Sean Payton gave him the playbook, some installs, and he learned it within 24 hours. So they were high on drafting him. Michael Penix went to a great situation. Listen, man. The Falcons, I don't mind the pick. I really don't. I don't know what you think about it, Dills.
I don't mind the pick. I was surprised that it was Penix over J.J. McCarthy. What I was most surprised about is that Kirk Cousins didn't know. a very interesting way to kind of start off this new era of Atlanta Falcons football. I thought bringing in Kirk Cousins was great. We all love that pickup because you look at the NFC and the NFC South in particular, it's anyone's division. And with Kirk, I think they should be pretty heavily favored going into next season. But it's a very interesting way to start off that relationship because we know in the past, we've seen other quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers comes to mind, even Brett Favre behind him. Even when you get kind of that heads up, it doesn't always go over well. So to give the guy that you just gave, you know, what was it, $140, $150 million to, a lot of it guaranteed, no sort of heads up. And then his agent has to come out with a statement after and basically saying this was never in any conversation. It's a little concerning because Kirk Cousins is a professional. You know, like, I don't think this is going to impact him in any way, but it's just you're kind of still figuring each other out, organization and quarterback. You're still trying to gain some trust, even though you got that money guaranteed. I guess there's some built-in trust from that point on, but you should be upfront in that situation. To talk about some of the other spots, Caleb Williams, we're all super high on. I think that's a no-brainer. The Drake May situation is interesting because I liked May more than Jaden Daniels, but I am worried about the situation in New England because the offensive line, they could be a bit suspect. The weapons we know are not good. You have a rookie head coach. There's a lot that you'd have to overcome if you're Drake May to have a successful rookie season. That doesn't mean that he won't be a successful quarterback down the line. I'm just saying out the gates, how is he going to look with, you know, some of the worst supporting cast in the NFL? Now, Jacoby Brissett, I think, should and likely will start the season just because you need some sort of, I think, ramp up for Drake May. You don't want to just throw him out there to the fire week one. I'd like to, for him to sit for a little bit just to get some reps in. And then the other quarterback spots. Bo Nix was super interesting. And Drew, I know you weren't the happiest at first. I'm not exactly sure how you feel now about it. Because like the college record for accuracy and all of that's great. We know that a ton of that was screens at the line of scrimmage within 10 yards. And while he was still accurate down the field, it's not exactly what he was asked to do all the time. So he has some tools, like you mentioned, Joel. Like I do think he has a pretty strong arm. I think he's more athletic than people give him credit for as well. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a bit of a different system than he's used to in Oregon. You know, I think those Auburn days are kind of out of my head now. I'm cool with the Oregon quarterback he had become. But it was a bit gimmicky just with Oregon's offense and their play style. I mean, if you look at his behind the line of scrimmage numbers, it was 131 attempts. Short was 181 attempts. And then medium and deep combined were only 140 attempts. So a lot of his stuff were kind of, at least the stats were a little hyped up accuracy-wise because so much of it was just near the line of scrimmage. But if you're a Broncos fan, you have to take shots at quarterback. Like I would rather take Bo Nix at 12 than go into next season with Zach Wilson, Jarrett Stidham, and Ben DiNucci, I believe, is the third string quarterback. You got to start taking some shots here. So if Sean Payton's able to kind of unlock Bo Nix, I think you need some weapons in there as well. Then you look like a genius because you're going to have him on a rookie contract for the next 4 or 5 seasons. But I don't know how easy or really the upside of Bo Nix. Is he ever going to be like a superstar quarterback? Maybe not. Again, you're taking him at 12. You're not taking him in the top 5 or the top 3 where maybe that's expected. But I do think you're going to need some supporting cast up around him for him to really reach a ceiling.
I'm going to talk as the Denver Bronco fan. Forget about being an analyst. I'll talk as a fan. In Sean Payton, we trust. That's as simple as I can make it. I say that because he came in, he had a plan. He made it where he did not see Russell Wilson as our future quarterback. He moved on from him. He said, we're going to be willing to eat almost $80 million of dead money to get him off of our team because he's simply not what we want, and that's not the direction we want to go towards. His obvious vision was, I need a quarterback that can win within the pocket, which is why I believe that was going to be Michael Penix. Felt a little bit justified when Atlanta did take him at pick 8, but at the same time, we still get the guy that Sean Payton had already come to draft day with the idea of who we were going. So with that being said, I would have loved Brock Bowers, because I do still think that we need some skill position players, especially after trading Jerry Jeudy, especially with Cortland Sutton being in trade rumors and his controversial Instagram post, his Twitter post, just not seeming as if he's all in on being a Denver Bronco at this current moment in time. Brock Bowers, especially for the generational tag that he's been deemed at the tight end position, I was very intrigued with that, especially with Shedeur Sanders being an option next year at quarterback. looking at this, the landscape of the Denver Broncos, I'm not too sure we're going to be that great of a team. Maybe we could be in contention for a Shedeur Sanders. But again, if Sean Payton believes this is our guy, he has not used a first-round pick on a quarterback before as a head coach. Obviously, he's had Drew Brees for the longest, and then he did retire very soon after that. But here he is now, and he believes in Bo Nix. So who am I to not side with one of the best offensive minds in the game? I think that 100% is facts. You get him on a rookie contract, especially if he's your guy and he can actually cater to the offense the way that Sean Payton has envisioned, then, hey, this is a home run selection. And then you get this with the sixth quarterback taken off the board. Again, I would have liked Penix. I think Penix has a little bit stronger of an arm. I think that he can win within the pocket as well, a little bit more athletic. Although, in his own right, Bo Nix is more athletic than, like Joel said, than people want to give him credit for. But I think that if Sean Payton has a plan, as a fan of the team, the guy who we traded picks to acquire, one of the a Hall of Fame coach, once it's all said and done, I'm in a position to trust what his plan is.
I think the easy winners were the Bears, Caleb Williams, and Roma Dunze. They could miss on every other pick, and it wouldn't matter as long as those two work out. Caleb Williams is in a great situation now. I think you could chalk him in as like offensive rookie of the year. But with that offensive situation, my goodness, it's a quarterback's dream. The Vikings trading up to get JJ McCarthy and Dallas Turner. I thought it was kind of like a great value version, with all due respect to those players. I thought it was a great value version of what the Texans did last year with C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson. I think J.J.'s good, and I think the Kyle Shanahan system is the system that he's meant to play in. He's the perfect Kyle Shanahan quarterback, and I think when it comes to comparing him to other players that are similar, it's Brock Purdy comes to mind, and you can kind of deal with the lack of physical tools. Even though JJ has more, you can deal with that because he doesn't have the highest ceiling, but he has plus tools. You can kind of deal with that if he can run the system. He's a play action quarterback. He throws middle of the field. I thought it was a nice pick. And Dallas Turner doesn't have a plethora of pass rush moves, really only wins one way, but he's a developmental pick. And after they lost Danielle Hunter in free agency, getting Jonathan Greenard, Andrew Van Ginkle, and now Dallas Turner, I thought it was pretty solid for them.
Another team I would talk about, New York Jets. There was a lot of questions about what the Jets would potentially do at 10. Brock Bowers was the hot name. Leading up to the draft, Roma Dunze really gained some buzz. The reports I saw were the Jets were trying to trade up into the top six. I heard they tried first with the New York Giants at pick six. The Giants want Malik Nabers. They tried to trade up to pick eight, but we know the Falcons now got Michael Penix, so I understand why they didn't want to trade back. And then you're the Bears at nine, who ended up taking Roma Dunze. So I do think that was the number one player on their board. And it turns out that at least the reports from Connor Hughes, who's a Jets beat reporter, is that Brock Bowers was kind of always a smokescreen. There was never really serious interest in him going number 10 overall. You know, you've heard rumors really for the last, 2 months, if that, you know, since the combine, it feels like that Aaron Rodgers wants another weapon. They're going to get a receiver or a tackle. And Joe Douglas kind of said, no, we're going to go the offensive tackle route. I think as long as it was tackle or if it was offensive weapon, the Jets couldn't go wrong because they needed both desperately. You need a third wide receiver because I'm not even really thinking about Alan Lazard. With all due respect to him, I don't want to see him on the field a ton as my wide receiver three, but they also needed a backup tackle and in general, just offensive line help. You know, you have Tyron Smith, who's missed a plethora of games. Basically every season, he's guaranteed to miss three games at a minimum. Morgan Moses was dealing with a torn pec last season. He was coming in and out of games, never really missed any games. And then, of course, you have a guy like AVT, who, when healthy, is one of the better guards, I think, in O-lineman in general with his versatility, but he's not been able to stay healthy in 2 years now with two serious injuries. So going offensive line, Olu has a ton of upside, especially as a pass protector. He didn't allow any sacks. His time at Penn State, he's super young at 21 years old. He's athletic. He's really everything you're looking for in an offensive tackle that is going to get taken in the top 11. The only thing that's unfortunate is for a Jets team that's trying to win now, he's probably not going to see the field. You know, is there a chance that they want to slide him into guard and he could fight with John Simpson for that right guard role? Potentially, but I do think they want him to be the franchise left tackle once Tyron Smith moves on, because that is only a one-year contract. So do you really want to mess with his mechanics and everything he's been doing there? But overall, I like what the Jets did. They also gained a couple of mid-round picks in rounds 4 and 5. I think they're going to try to make a move for a receiver at some point tomorrow. Like I said, I would love to get an upgrade at the wide receiver three. Still got some guys like A.D. Mitchell. You got Ladd on the board. I know there was a late wide receiver one at the end of round one, but I wouldn't be surprised if day two the Jets try to go and make a move at receiver with the extra picks they got.
Listen, you came in with a clear game plan this offseason. Let's make sure we protect our quarterback this year. And that's exactly what you guys have done. I love the draft pick. Now, let me talk about two picks that happened back-to-back. Steal of the night for me right now at pick 22, Quinyon Mitchell. I mean, Howie Roseman, every single year I feel like we're talking about the Philadelphia Eagles as winners. You get the best available cornerback, in my opinion. You had your pick of the litter, and you didn't have to trade up to acquire them. So, I mean, obviously that's a clear win for me. Quinyon Mitchell immediately goes into a wide receiver room, to a cornerback room that desperately needed some depth. And you go and you get, in my opinion, the best available. And at pick 23, the Jacksonville Jaguars secure one of my favorite prospects in this draft, Brian Thomas. You desperately needed a wide receiver, especially after losing Calvin Ridley. And you did that for a valid reason. If you were to have brought him back, if I'm not mistaken, you would have lost the second round pick. And in doing so, you were able to trade back. You still were able to get the guy that you wanted. And now you add to the wide receiving core that Trevor Lawrence did desperately need some help. Understanding the offensive line definitely was in play, but you did acquire assets that you can use and allocate to fixing up that offensive line. So I want to give credit to those two teams. Jacksonville came in with a game plan, and that was to benefit Trevor Lawrence, because that is your franchise. That is the future. And you can't have him throwing to just Christian Kirk. And obviously you did bring in Gabe Davis, but Gabe Davis is at best at this point in time, a very low end wide receiver too. You go and you give him Brian Thomas, who has the upside to be a wide receiver one. And you gain assets by trading back and still getting your guy.
I feel like with 23 offensive players going in the first round, teams that need a defense were able to draft the best available prospects at those positions. You mentioned Quinyon Mitchell with the Eagles. I think now having Slay and Isaiah Rogers, Quinyon Mitchell is really effective in the nickel, can now play that and kind of, you know, add to the secondary group that they really didn't have a nickel back last year. And then Terrion Arnold, that was also a great pick. If I'm not mistaken, with the Lions. I think Terrion Arnold, his physicality and how he plays with is going to match their culture identity. He slipped in the draft because he ran a 4.5, but he's a very physical corner, and I think he has immense upside. Then you had teams like the Colts draft Laiatu Latu, mentioned the Vikings trade up for Dallas Turner, the Seahawks draft Byron Murphy, the Ravens draft Nate Wiggins. I mean, these teams were able to capitalize on some great defensive talent because every team was worried about drafting offense.
I'll mention just a couple other names as well. One name that I was surprised went in the first round was Ricky Pearsall, the wide receiver out of Florida. He was someone that, at least mocks-wise, you know, mock drafts, rankings, was always kind of a day two guy, usually in round two. But he goes here 31 to the San Francisco 49ers. And it is pretty funny. I'm just looking at Michael Silver's tweet on Twitter. The six best and worst picks of the 49ers, the six best and worst picks of the Shanahan/John Lynch era. The best ones, you got George Kittle in the fifth round, Fred Warner in the third round, Debo in the second round, Nick Bosa in the first, Dre Greenlaw in the fifth, and then Brock Purdy in the seventh. The six worst picks, Solomon Thomas first round, Reuben Foster first round, Dante Pettis second round, Javon Kinlaw first round, Trey Jackson first round, Trey Lance first round, Drake Jackson second round. They don't have the best track records of hitting on their early picks, and then they're able to hit on these picks later in the draft. But why I want to mention this is because the Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel sweepstakes seem to be getting hotter. You know, at first it felt like Ayuk was going to be the one who gets traded. The most recent reports, it seems like Debo Samuel is more likely out of the two receivers to get traded. And the fact that they take a wide receiver here in the first round when there's some other holes, offensive line they could have gone, secondary they could have gone, I think that really matters. And one team to keep an eye on that made multiple trade downs in this draft was the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills trade completely out of the first round. They don't use their pick. They picked up a ton of extra picks on day two and day three. And now they have tomorrow to maybe try to figure something out. If I'm the Buffalo Bills, getting a rookie wide receiver is fantastic. I think you see A.D. Mitchell sliding, especially because of kind of the ancillary issues that he has when it comes to body language and maybe off the field type stuff that coaches and owners and GMs maybe don't love. So that's a talented player that is slipping right now. But they could also be trying to eye up another receiver, whether that's T. Higgins, although probably unlikely in conference with another rival. But a player like Deebo Samuel going to Buffalo, I think, could be a real possibility.
NFL draft losers. These are two teams that I just want to talk about and kind of give a case against why I think they didn't lose the night. I think the Bills are getting a lot of slander right now because they allowed Casey to draft Xavier Worthy, the pick that, you know, Patrick Mahomes wanted. But the Bills trading back to pick number 32, then trading back one spot with the Panthers and letting them grab Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina and being at pick number 33, I think the Bills, they clearly knew that their guy wasn't going to get drafted in the first round. So just go pick with the first pick in the second round and get your guy. And they added so much draft capital. It hurts that you traded with KC, but from a GM perspective, I thought the moves were pretty smart. And a lot of people are hating the Falcons for taking Michael Penix Jr. Whenever a team drafts a quarterback that already has a starting quarterback in place, everybody flips the F out. Kirk Cousins just got paid. We all know that. It's a four-year deal only in name. If you look at the numbers of the deal, only 2 years are guaranteed. Kirk is coming off of an Achilles injury, which is a serious injury. He's on the older side, and drafting Michael Penix now gives them an insurance plan for the future. He sits 2 years and becomes a starter in year three. He'll be, what, 26 years old around there? That's totally fine. This Falcons team is a young team with Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson. I think based off of history and when we've seen teams draft quarterbacks with already a quarterback in place, it usually goes right. Everybody slandered the Packers when they drafted Jordan Love. And then 4 years later, the Packers were vindicated because Jordan Love ended up being a stud. Now, who knows if Penix is going to be a stud, but I don't think we have to hound on the Falcons for drafting a successor. The loser is Kirk Cousins because he was blindsided, but I don't feel like he should have been totally taken aback by this. He's an older quarterback. It makes sense why a team would want to draft a quarterback to be mentored by such a great guy like Kirk. Who better to mentor a young quarterback than Kirk Cousins? I don't understand all this slander. It was a shocking pick, but I don't think it was a terrible pick.
Listen, you guys know my opinion on Michael Penix. I wanted him to be the quarterback selected for my Denver Broncos, but the Atlanta Falcons, I see nothing wrong with this. You just paid a guy, I should say, a lot of money, but who is coming off a serious injury in a torn Achilles, and he is at the age of 35. You drafted an insurance policy. You drafted a mate. People are trying to say that that is high, but again, there were reports that, hey, the Giants, which obviously ended up being a bunch of bullshit, thank God, that were interested at maybe taking Michael Penix early on. You understood that the Raiders were interested in trading up to try to acquire a Michael Penix. Obviously, the Broncos were in sweepstakes to acquire Michael Penix also, but Bo Nix seemed to be our guy all along. I don't know if that's just what the comments were after, since Bo Nix ended up being our guy, but I felt like it was always between the two of them. And if you're Atlanta, offensively, do you need anything else, really? I mean, Rome Odunze would have been just like the cherry on top. That's who I would have been tempted to select. But now you have your backup plan. And in a league where we've seen teams trade third-round picks, late draft picks for backup quarterbacks like a Mac Jones, like a Kenny Pickett, these are valuable options because quarterback is so essential. If you have an injury to your quarterback, your season is over. Look at the New York Jets. They didn't want that to happen again, obviously. So what did they do? If I'm not mistaken, Tyrod Taylor's now your backup, correct? So you understand, hey, God forbid this guy that we just paid an exuberant amount of money is not ready. We have an option at least. And it's someone who has the intangibles to play football at a high level. He has a strong arm, can really work within the pocket, has great athleticism as well. The only thing that he does need to work on is touch. And I think with sitting behind Kirk Cousins and learning and really taking in the knowledge of what the NFL is, learning the playbook, learning to pick up defensive cues, we can see Penix develop into a great quarterback, understanding you have Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson, Tyler Allgeier, a solid offensive line. this is going to be a situation where we can be looking at years down the road, Atlanta, where they look like they reached, they hit a home run.
And you don't want to be in that position where you have an old quarterback and you don't have an answer. I mean, look at the Pittsburgh Steelers for really those last couple of years with Big Ben. And then all of a sudden you're forced to take Kenny Pickett. We kind of knew Kenny Pickett was like, yeah, he's a first round quarterback because there's really not any good quarterbacks in this class. That was Malik Willis and Matt Corral and all of those guys. And now you kind of waste 2 years because Kenny Pickett was never that guy. And then you get some guys like Brock Purdy, where if you just keep drafting quarterbacks again, top eight is not the last pick like Brock Purdy. But to Joel's point, this is a 2-year contract with Kirk Cousins. And then to Drew's point, you're at worst getting a pretty high level backup quarterback. If Kirk Cousins is either, you know, struggling to get over that Achilles injury or he misses some time, you have a competent starter, I think, year one at a minimum that could come in. I'm not expecting week one, but of course, down the line, if he's able to come in and probably still compete for the division. The last pair of picks that I just want to mention here are just a pair of offensive line picks. I was a bit surprised that the Bengals went with Mims over Fatanu, because it felt like Troy was a bit more of a safer prospect. I like his versatility, being able to play tackle or guard. Mike Tomlin said that he's going to be the left tackle of this team. I think he was projected to play guard just because of his smaller frame. He's about 6'3", 6'4", a bit shorter on the bit shorter arms. Mims gives you that upside. He only started 8 games in college. He played in some more, but he was battling injuries throughout his career. I was a bit surprised it went that route and went upside over kind of the plug-and-play starter day one.
Real quick, my loser, 100%. I don't care what his game plan is. I respect the hell out of Harbaugh. You guys understand that. That's my guy from Michigan. The loser of the day is Justin Herbert. You have an opportunity at Malik Nabers, an opportunity at Roma Dunze, and now we've come to the realization that they have gone all in on becoming a run-first team by selecting Joe Alt, who most likely will be playing right tackle, opposite side of Rashawn Slater. You have really put yourself into a tight box where now all you guys are going to really be looking at is rushing the football, where now you have Quinn Johnson, Josh Palmer as the X and the Z in the offense. How can you feel great about this if you are a Chargers fan when you had an opportunity to secure one of the better wide receiver prospects that we've seen in some time, and you allow the Giants to hit a steal with Malik Nabers? And honestly, you could have turned the draft right on its head. The fact that Rome was able to drop to 9 is the reason we're so high on Chicago. I tweeted immediately. After that Roma Dunze pick, there was no bigger winner to me than the Chicago Bears. But that could have been all nixed. Sorry, I have a fly that's going near my eye. That could have been all nixed if the Chargers were to have taken a wide receiver at pick 5. But now you're putting in a situation where Herbert has to play hero ball. And we've seen him play very tactically these last 2 seasons, where he's not as much of a risk taker as we saw in the first 2 years of his career, specifically year 2, where he's among the league leader in interceptions, but one of the league leaders in yards and passing touchdowns. So to me, I just don't see how you benefited Justin Herbert. You kind of put him under a microscope now, even more so, where the haters are now going to nitpick his game because he's not as prolific. Where if it works out to your plan and Greg Roman really draws up a great run scheme like we know that he can, and you're now put in a situation where Herbert is a great passer, obviously he can work with minimal and still make it work, then hey, I'm okay to eat my words. But why not at least make his life a little bit easier and get him one of the better wide receiver prospects in this draft?
You know, the thing with the Chargers is that I'm kind of torn with how I feel about it. I think people are overreacting to the pick. I really do. I understand getting Justin Herbert some wide receiver help, but he's been injured the last 2 seasons, and it's been in a large part due to either Rashawn Slater going out at left tackle and them not having a viable option there, or it's been the right side with Trey Pipkin starting at right tackle. So he's gotten hurt because he's taken a beating in the pocket, and you do need an offensive lineman. And now if you have Joe Alt, that's an all-pro tackle combination with Slater and Joe Alt. It just is. You can draft a wide receiver in the second round. There are still some free agent wide receivers out there to not make this weapons room totally a disaster. But even if they drafted a receiver at five, it would have been Herbert playing hero ball. Malik Nabers isn't changing totally how this offense is run, especially if the right side of your offensive line is terrible. So I have mixed reactions. I think it was kind of a good pick either way, because they clearly want to build the identity of this team in the trenches, and that's never a bad thing to protect your quarterback. I thought the Dolphins pick with Chop Robinson was questionable. Chop Robinson is developmental pick.
I think Chop as a prospect, honestly. I mean, he's a great athlete.
Chop has physical tools, but the thing with Chop Robinson is that he is still a project. He's not winning as consistently as the top edge rushers in this draft class. And after losing Christian Wilkins, there's a need in the middle with Jerzon Newton. There's a need. You lost Christian Wilkins. Jerzon Newton is a better prospect than Chop Robinson. I thought it was a questionable pick. And not only did you need edge rusher, but Jackson Powers Johnson at center was right there. You needed offensive linemen. Graham Barton was right there. There were a lot of offensive linemen that they passed up on and better defensive prospects they passed up on for Chop. And I think that's the big issue with them just drafting him. You know, I understand another team that didn't really need it, but I mean, asking him to go in and start day one because of injuries, it's a lot to ask of him.
I definitely was left feeling the same with Jerzon Newton. The fact that he was on the board, you had an opportunity to select him, especially after losing Christian Wilkins, one of the leaders of the locker room. I was anticipating that to be the pick or offensive lineman, like you mentioned. You either solidify that interior, or on the opposite side, you solidify the interior on the defensive side of the ball. And with Tua Tagovailoa, understanding he has to win within the pocket, I was anticipating it to be an interior offensive lineman. But I do like Chop as a prospect, understanding the pick as well. You did just lose Andrew Van Ginkle to free agency. And, of course, Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips did suffer injuries last season. So you kind of had to go out there and solidify the edge position for themselves. But I do agree. I think that there were better players to be had at that selection. Although I do like Chop as a prospect, at that selection, there were better options.
Any more losers you guys have? I see that, in the comments.
I feel like it's a wait and see. Off round one, I liked a lot of picks. I liked a lot of people. I liked a lot of teams that, if they didn't feel like they liked their pick, like the Jaguars, like the Buffalo Bills, they were able to trade back. I feel like with the conversation of the Chargers, if you did want an offensive lineman at pick five, you could have gotten strong compensation for that selection. Still gotten a great offensive lineman prospect, although not of the talent of Joe Alt, no doubt about it. But you still could have gotten yourself a J.C. Latham or a Olu Fashanu. I don't want to mispronounce his name.
Fashanu.
Thank you. You could have gotten one of those and gotten maybe a potential first round pick next year, because teams did want a Malik Nabers. Teams did want a Roma Dunze. Teams did want a quarterback. So that's the only thing that I feel like I'm left with the Los Angeles Chargers. And I understand what you're saying. You need to protect the franchise, and that is Justin Herbert, but you could have better capitalized on your situation. Joe Alt is the best tackle available in this draft class. We understand that. But at the same time, you still could have gotten a great player at that position and also benefited yourself even more for draft picks in the future.
I have one other loser. NFL beat reporters.
NFL beat reporters, why?
NFL beat reporters, because
they took a huge L today.
How did nobody know how high everyone was on, at a minimum, Michael Penix? Because not only does he go number 8 overall, the reports are the Saints try to move up for him, the Seahawks try to move up for him, the Raiders try to move up for him, and then you have Bo Nix go number 12 overall. These were players that I think, as maybe we kind of approached the draft, Michael Penix was like, okay, this is probably a round one guy. Bo Nix felt like maybe a bit of a reach, but even at the still, like maybe end of the first round type guy. It's usually the opposite. It's usually we hear like 6 quarterbacks are going to go in the first round and like 3 quarterbacks go and the rest of the guys fall to day 2. This year was the opposite, where we're like, we know the top 4 guys with J.J. McCarthy are going to go. And then I guess we'll kind of wait and see. And it's like, nope, those guys, one even went higher than J.J. McCarthy. You did not see a lot of mocks with Michael Penix. At least I didn't see any with Michael Penix as the 4th quarterback off the board.
It was a total shock. I think the loser is the Raiders too, because they needed a quarterback. And I think Brock Bowers is a great pick, but it really doesn't matter. Like, as harsh as it is to say, it doesn't matter, even if you're drafting great players, if you don't have a quarterback. Gardner Minshew being their starter for next season, with Luke Getsy, by the way, calling plays. Gardner Minshew was solid last year. Shane Steichen was really making everything easy for Gardner. So him now going to a brand new offense with a much worse play caller. I mean, he's not a starting quarterback. He's just not. He's not a good starting quarterback. So it just doesn't matter. And I know there was rumors that they wanted to trade up to number two. That's just to make the franchise look a little bit better. They were never going to get up to number two, regardless of what they traded. So I think them being at 13 and standing pat and not trading up to at least get a guy to kind of say, you know, this is somebody that you could put some faith in, I think it was a mistake. I had one more loser too. The only other loser I was going to mention was the Cardinals at pick 27 with Darius Robinson. Another pick, a kind of questionable. Cowboys taking Tyler Guyton, trading back when I thought there were a better offensive lineman option. And I really think the Commanders lost taking Jaden Daniels. I know with stats, like, any college quarterback is going to have great stats, especially if they're a first round pick. It's not about their stats. It's about what you watch on tape and see if it's translatable to the NFL. Trey Lance had like 42 touchdowns and zero interceptions out of college. Clearly none of those things translated to the NFL because he couldn't win a quarterback battle in training camp. So you have to just watch that. And with Jaden Daniels, like, Ben Solak charted a bunch of really good quarterback stats about how when he's under duress and under pressure, he only stands and delivers passes 34% of the time, which was the worst of any quarterback that was draftable. He takes a sack on 23% of those pressures, which was the worst as well. And his accuracy rating, pinpoint accuracy rating, drops from 70.5% on his first read to 46.3% on reads after. I think he's a boomer bust prospect. Second overall pick, too rich for my liking to take him that high.
You mentioned the Cowboys. I believe the Cowboys traded back because Brian Thomas got selected. I think Brian Thomas was their guy, and they got sniped by the Jaguars and then understood, we want an offensive lineman. We're going to trade back with the Lions. Lions end up getting a home run pick with Terrion Arnold. But, hey, you still solidify a need. And I believe that the top four receivers went rightfully so. Brian Thomas was my fourth wide receiver off the board. But I'm not too mad at the Cowboys in that situation, where I believe their guy was Brian. They said, hey, it is what it is. We're going to take our loss on this. We can get Tyler if we do back up. And they end up still getting their guy. What did you think about the Packers selection?
I thought it was great. Jordan Morgan, he's probably going to play guard. They'll probably try him out to tackle first and challenge Rasheed Walker. But they just lost John Runyon to the Giants. So there was a need at guard. And they needed offensive tackle play. He didn't go in the first round. So it seems like they weren't the only team that was worried about him. The thing about Cooper DeJean is that he doesn't have the agility, I think, that NFL teams are projecting him to have to play corner in the NFL. So he's more so going to be a safety in the NFL. And that's how NFL circles are viewing what he's going to play. And you add on that he has an injury history. I mean, this isn't a Kyle Hamilton level prospect. And I think offensive line is a bigger need, given the fact that they need to protect Jordan Love.
Agreed.
They just signed Xavier McKinney to be their safety.
True.
And in the second round, they could maybe get any of one of these guys. We don't know how far Cooper DeJean is going to fall. So maybe they knew that they can get him in the second round. And that's why they drafted a tackle slash guard in the first.
All right.
Do we think a wide receiver goes pick 33 Buffalo, pick 34 New England? Is this an A.D. Mitchell or a lad's landing spot?
A.D. Mitchell, second round pick three, makes a lot of sense.
I think that's been their guy, the Bills guy. I think it's been A.D. Mitchell. I think they go with A.D. Mitchell with the first pick in the second round. A lot of great prospects still. Who knows where Jerzon Newman's going to go? Cooper DeJean, Kool-Aid McKinstry.
I was going to say, to read off the guys that are still available: Jerzon Newman, Jackson Powers-Johnson, Zach Frazier, all linemen, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Cooper DeJean, Enos Rakestraw, don't want to mispronounce his name, A.D. Mitchell, Ladd McConkey, Keon Coleman, some great guys, and Spencer Rattler.
All the running backs are still there.
Notable, and of course, Blake Corum.
Troy Franklin's still there.
I'm kind of shocked that the Panthers just traded up that one spot for Xavier Leggett. I don't know what it does. Maybe the team was going to draft him there or trade up, but I think they probably could have got him with the first pick in the second round.
Got to get that fifth-year option, man.
Maybe they thought that the Bills are going to take him.
Where's the Spencer Rattler landing spot?
They're saying the Giants. That's what the streets are saying.
Okay, I like that. I like that.
Raiders.
Giants, Raiders, that makes sense. Saints maybe.
Saints, like that.
So I see in these comments, people were talking about Michael Penix's junior's age. He's 23 now. So if he starts, he'll be like 26. Just for reference, Aaron Rodgers started when he was 25. I don't think starting at 25 versus 26 is that big of a difference. And it doesn't matter. A quarterback doesn't fall off at 26. Their career just starts. So I don't think that it's a big deal that if he's 26 and starting, it just matters that he's good or not. If he's bad, it's gonna suck regardless. If he's good, it's not gonna matter. And that's just the final thing I want to say on that. That's gonna do it. First round draft reaction. Recap some game threes in the NBA. Lakers down 0-3. Sixers win game three. Knicks Sixers at 2-1. Orlando and Cleveland at 2-1 with the Cavs leading. We'll be back here tomorrow night recapping the playoff games on Playback. Thank you guys for watching, and we'll see you guys next time.